Marketing playbooks are quickly becoming relics in today's rapidly evolving digital landscape. Just think about it. In the last 12 months alone, you've seen the rise of AI, significant layoffs, the emergence of generative search, and constant tweaks in the social media algorithms from LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. It's like trying to hit a moving target with a blindfold. That's where Mark Thomas's rinse and repeat framework comes in. He's a senior growth marketer at Podia, and he uses this strategy to drive growth in an era of uncertainty. In this Marketing Power-Ups episode, you learn, first of all, why marketing playbooks no longer work. Second, how to come up with out-of-the-box marketing ideas. Third, one example of a creative campaign that Mark ran at Podia. And number four, a power-up that has accelerated Mark's career. Now, before we get started, I created a free power-ups cheat sheet that you can download and use Mark Thomas's rinse and repeat framework to your business. Get it now at marketingpowerups.com or find the link in the show notes and description. Are you ready? Let's go.
Marketing Power-Ups. Ready? Go! Here's your host, Ramley John.
Well, I'm excited to be digging into this rinse and repeat framework that you've been sharing. You're writing a post about it. Is that live now, or would that be live?
Yeah, it's live. Yeah, it's live on my blog. It's positivehuman.co.
All right, awesome. I will link that in the show notes and description. But I think let's get started and talk about why you created this in the first place. If I recall in that post, there's a lot of things that are changing, specifically around playbooks. I think, like, what's your love-hate relationship with playbooks, first of all? what has changed?
Oh, I mean, like, playbooks really, like, they work to a certain extent. Mm. And if you go back like 10 years ago, say, in SaaS market, or even just marketing in general for B2B, there's like a couple of different channels that you're probably using. So like search, paid media, content, which feeds into search probably. And then you've got like, you know, conversion rate optimization, stuff like that. Those are the things that people are trying to do to grow. That really, really worked well for like the last 10 years. But over the past like 5, 6, and definitely over the past 3 years, there's been like what I think is like kind of like a perfect storm of changes in the industry. So a couple of things. Firstly, the market became flooded with software products that were funded by VC. And that means that they just eat up marketplaces. The second is that those small companies began to dominate share of voice on search. So if you have a set of topics that you think that you can write about for your customers, your ideal customer, that company over there, which is really well funded, might have previously been totally disinterested in it, but they then ate up all of their search share of voice. And so they're coming for yours too. And then the next person, we're getting this like almost monopoly of search, which makes it so hard for you to drive enough traffic through search for your business to actually grow. And then we had like GDPR, other privacy legislation, all the letters that I've forgotten, they start to erode basically companies' abilities to track things, to contact users without permission. We're talking about data privacy here. That went really further with the iOS 16 update from Apple, where like almost overnight, a lot of brands lost their ability to meaningfully attribute clicks and to track people across the internet. The B2C, or D2C, I should say, probably, market and industry was like completely decimated for a little while. They had no idea what to do with themselves.
Right.
And then finally, AI-generated content this year. It's everything everywhere all at once, right? All of the thoughts, all of the ideas, all of the strategies, they're on like steroids now. And then, oh yeah, by the way, Google also sunsetted Universal Analytics this year. So now it's really, really hard to actually attribute any of your marketing spend, right? And so like, that's where we arrive. We're in December-ish now, or whenever this goes out, a couple of months later, probably, it's going to be even more pronounced. Things will have moved on even further. And it is hard for many marketers right now to actually do anything that they might have done previously to grow their companies. And that's worrying, right? Because all of those playbooks relied on those channels that are now being completely wiped off the board. So the playbooks kind of still work in some ways, but you're doing the same thing as everyone else, and everyone else is seeing diminishing returns. Something's got to give, right? That's where we're at. And that's where I think the marketing industry as a whole has found itself at the end of 2023.
Yeah, I think things have changed so much. You know, I just got a message from KK from our content team saying that the way Google is looking at videos on blog posts is now like different. I'm like, what? Things are changing on a week-to-week basis on search or on other platforms. And I think people who rely on playbooks, they've got to like review them and make sure that does it still work in the current climate. Like, when was this created? If it was created 2 years ago, like the world 2 years ago was totally different, like macroeconomic, interest rates, the way customers buy to now, and even the marketing channels have changed so dramatically in the last even year, like 12 months ago.
Yeah. And it's even funny, right? Because we're just talking about marketing metrics here. So like a lot of marketing teams are for reasons, like many reasons, some good, some bad, some sort of like, I don't know, they're kind of divorced from actual revenue metrics, right? So it's sometimes hard for a marketing team to really sort of appreciate, look, are these, you know, of these 1,000 customers that we think we've sent to become customers, how many actually paid us? And I'm definitely not condemning anyone's sort of lead generation tactics. Like those things have worked for a long time. They will continue to work, maybe a little differently. But we're in this place where it's like, it's not just about marketing numbers changing. It's also about the whole industry and the way that revenue is generated and all this kind of stuff. And that's like, that's pretty intimidating especially if you're just in the middle of a marketing organization. If you're a senior leader, you have at least some agency here, right? You can do things. If you're in the middle or the bottom in terms of the hierarchy, you're going to have to like have a very coherent theory about how things are going to change and be able to come up with ideas on how to actually change those things. It's a big opportunity to either get like eaten or to eat.
Eaten or eat. I like it. Feast or famine. You know, you have to choose. And really that's where this framework comes in, the rinse and repeat. We can go through, you know, the RIN. But to me, what I understood it at is going back to the basics. It's really about, you know, I don't want to give away too much. What is that framework? And let's dig into it in a bit.
Yeah. So before I do that, I think it really makes sense, if it's okay with you, to kind of talk about why some companies grow faster than others.
Okay. Let's do that.
This is super interesting. Okay. Right. A lot of SaaS marketing relies on performance marketing principles. So if you put in $1, you'll get out $10, right? That would be a dream for a lot of people. realistically, you get 10 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
That performance marketing, again, relies on all of these playbooks. And I'm not saying performance marketing is going away either. This will be a theme here on this conversation. Like, these things do still work to a degree. But have you ever wondered why some companies appear to be growing like just at an incredible rate, while others are sort of like, you might feel this, I'm not saying you, Ramley, specifically, I don't know if you do, but in your company, dear listener, you just feel like you're churning stuff. You're trying to like do stuff and you're like, why is this curve not happening that I'm seeing everyone up, right? The majority of companies are not seeing that curve. They're seeing like firstly very bumpy growth, but it's definitely not as steep as they want it to be. On the other hand, a company like ClickUp, I used this case study in the blog post. Now, I don't actually have any of ClickUp's growth numbers, but I will place a healthy bet. I would eat my hat. I would eat Ramley's hat if I'm wrong here about this. ClickUp started as like a to-do list, right? Effectively a to-do list tool. And that's an incredibly hard market to win in. There's millions of to-do list tools. And they're all for different people. But then they did gain some traction, probably with that VC money. And they gained some traction in there by probably spending inefficiently to just acquire a lot of people. And they added additional features. They added, you know, they added like team productivity tools. So suddenly they're not just a to-do list. They're also a team productivity tool. And then they added document editing features. So now they're not just the team productivity tool like Asana. They're also the document editing thing like Google Docs. And then they added like AI. And so now they're trying to go over and take over like, I don't know, Jarvis or copy AI, you know, effectively tools which, you know, bless the teams there, like are inferior to a tool like ClickUp by some distance because they're so much broader and that's how business is buying. Now, the challenge there and the reason that ClickUp is growing so fast, and this is true of many large software companies, is that the marketing, the ideology for marketing that we have, which is performance marketing, that's the dominant ideology in SaaS marketing, is actually not reflective of reality, or not the whole of it. There's a really great book that I really recommend everyone read now called How Brands Grow by Professor Byron Sharp. Now, this has been a sort of a staple of marketing science for a long time outside of SaaS, but it's only really becoming kind of read in SaaS recently in my kind of feeling. Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. I have not read it completely yet, though. So
well,
I'm going to check it
well,
out after this.
Yeah, I would. It's great. And really one of the core ideas from that book, and the guy proves it with mostly consumer goods. So there are some differences in the kind of the way that these industries work. His core thesis is basically brands grow because they develop weak relationships with a large number of people. Whereas SaaS marketing works on the principle that if you segment very well and very neatly, you will gain strong relationships with a market. Now, these different ideologies about marketing, one of them, the SaaS marketing ideology, is effectively becoming less effective as the technology which allows us to do these things is becoming less effective. How brands grow is by acquiring lots of customers and building effectively weak relationships. They might pay you once, they might pay you for a short period of time, they'll churn, they'll go to someone else, they'll come back to you eventually. And in fact, he even shows in this book, in this really, really enlightening chapter, that effectively all companies churn a pretty fixed amount of business every month, whether they're large companies, whether they're small companies, they'll pretty much, there are bounds, obviously, churn more or less the same percentage of their revenue each month. But crucial thing is the big companies are growing because they're adding new customers. And so that percentage of revenue actually equates for a smaller, it's the same amount, but it's like the whole of the revenue of the smaller companies over time. They're growing the amount that they can churn, but the smaller companies are trying to maintain the small segment of the market. And so a lot of companies who are going to win will be the companies who find ways to firstly acquire a lot of customers from places that they may not think acquire them already. And frankly, are just trying different things to get in front of those people because ClickUp's got a much bigger budget than you. And so you have to be smart and think about how you're going to get in front of people and make them want your company and your tool over a long period of time. So that's the kind of like, I think this is a really kind of core idea here, and it will become an even more important idea over the next sort of 5 to 10 years for SaaS marketing. And that's why I'm excited about rinse and repeat as a framework, Because it's kind of like the anti-framework. Comment
before you jump into the framework. It's interesting. I mentioned it's like Mr. Beast because, you know, he's gotten to the point where now he's acquiring. I watch a lot of YouTube videos. I'm not sure if you know this about me, Mark. For people,
I do. I'm like, yeah. Even,
like people like Ramley, why you subscribe to YouTube Premium? Because I don't want ads. I don't. Like, I watch YouTube on my TV, and I've been analyzing Mr. Beast, and he's, you know, he's one of the biggest YouTubers in there. And the way that he's grown so fast, first of all, you mentioned he's doing videos that attract a lot of people. But at this point now, he has almost unlimited budget to spend because he's created products like Mr. Beast bars. And like his videos are like spending maybe $10 million on a video, which other creators can't. Uh-huh. He's getting more competitive. And I think this is what you're talking about is like, how do you, you know, first of all, you know, think of ideas to attract a larger audience and keep it there. And I think that's, this framework could apply to marketers as well as other things, which I'm excited about. Even Mr. Beast.
Well, yeah, I'll send Mr. Beast my consultancy check. yeah, and that's really interesting. I'd not really thought about it before in that specific example, but yeah, you're totally right. That is how he's grown. He's doing things that other people are unable to do and appealing to an ever broader audience.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally. Should we walk through this?
Let's jump in.
Let's jump in. All right.
You've created this this foundation and really like the importance of how SaaS will grow, business will grow.
Sweet. Well, hopefully we look back on this episode in 5 years and go, he was right. I am very Mark much right. trying.
He's a prophet. He's a marketing prophet.
I am very much trying to be less dogmatic and less arrogant as I get older. So hopefully we can live up to that. All right. So rinse and repeat is actually I came up with this after talking to Ramley on a call. Oh, really? So
I will send you my consulting bill after this.
I'll pass it on to Mr. Beast. We were talking actually about how people are growing and how kind of people are creating these campaigns and come out of interesting ideas. And I was like, look, there is no playbook anymore. There has to be like some way that we go through this stuff so that we can all do it relatively easily. But we have to get away from like these kind of very dense playbooks we've run on for so long. And I thought, well, there's actually three major stages of this kind of new anti-playbook, rinse and repeat is what I call it. The first one is R. So that's the R in rinse. So that stands for relate, which is effectively you have to have an understanding of your market and your customers. Now, it's funny actually that we're contrasting this concept of like how brands grow with which is all about like mass market with kind of, you know, this, how do you know about your customers and their fears and their needs and stuff? We can talk about that in a little bit, actually. That'd be really interesting. So that's R, and we can dive in deeper to each of these as we go. Then we've got I, which is ideate. So basically using those insights that you gain from relating to your customers, you should come up with and produce unique, novel campaigns and growth systems that are not based on classic channel playbooks. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Don't stick to the channel playbooks that you've already run successfully in the past, because they will continue to diminish in value. And then N, which is I-N, that's narrate. So realize that we're effectively no longer able to point to a Google Analytics report. And we can't, because firstly, Google Analytics is awful. even the new version, it was definitely failed to live up to the promise, I think.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that because a lot of these channels are actually not measurable by the standard definitions of success that we might otherwise have used. And so we have to build them. We have to build a narrative rather than just a report. And it has to be a mixture of qualitative, quantitative signals so that we can actually show marketing ROI. And then that's RIN. And then we just put SE in there to make it nice and easy. And repeat, because this is an ongoing process. It's iterative.
Right.
And every time that you need to think about how am I going to solve this business challenge, you should go back to the start of this playbook. So yeah, how do you feel about that, Ramley?
Oh, I like it. I think that goes back to what you were talking about, building strong relationship. Let's start with that, you know, about the relate. You mentioned something about an interesting part you want to double click in around like relating to your customers in a deeper yeah. level.
Yeah, sure. So what I'll say is like I'm kind of at the start of this journey in some ways, you know, like most people in SaaS marketing. So I'm kind of learning as I go here, which is really enjoyable. I'm relishing this period of my career. But I get to do this at Podia, which is where I work day to day. And Podia is becoming a mass market tool. We are moving into new markets. And so it's a really fun time to be trying this stuff out. So let's start with relate then. So people say you should understand your customers, or your marketing should be based on customer understanding. Do customer research, talk to customers, but then they almost never tell you how to actually do that, right, or why, or what to do with that information. Now at Podia, we run a lot of customer research, and the whole company is based on research, basically. So both the feature development and things like that, customer research feeds into that, but also our marketing, the campaigns that we run, everything. Now I thought it could be useful here to talk about how we run through a sprint customer research.
Yeah,
just to give people a really sort of indicative idea. So customer research is funny because people tend to look at it from this like really one dimensional angle of like, I should do customer research about asking people their pains and stuff like that. Now that is great. That is an exercise for customer research. But what we've found is that there are actually multiple ways that you can do this, and they generally go in themes. So we might, I just completed a couple of sprints of research. Sprints last about 45 days each, where we investigate a different aspect of our customers' lives. So recently we've been asking people about how blogging fits into their business and what blogging means for them. And kind of learning about our customers' needs and their businesses and the way that they think about growing and stuff like that through that. So what we do is we define the scope of the research that we're running. So as I said, or another example here, attitudes of our users to email marketing. We also launched a big email marketing platform earlier this year. So we did define the scope around that. What's the problems that they face? You know, what are they already doing? That kind of stuff. First thing that we do then after that is we ask a closed question about the topic in a way that will allow us to kind of to segment on specific user characteristics. So we'll ask people who have used, say, an email marketing platform in the past, which email marketing platform have you used? So it's closed. We're trying to understand, does this person have a valid viewpoint, or is this the one that we're interested in? So that's effectively like kind of quantitative, because we're just asking people's stuff here. We just want to know who is in the market. Then what we'll do is we'll identify respondents who responded to that survey, in-app survey, to participate in a user interview. So I recently ran a project where I did 20 user interviews. And in that, we ask very open questions. So these are based on the topic. They're generally stuff like, you know, for email marketing, how did you get started with email marketing? So we're talking about the origin story there. And then we might say, what role does it play in your business now? How has that changed over time? And stuff like that. We'll barely ever ask about the actual feature of email marketing. From that, we take and we code the transcripts looking for themes. So basically, it's a spreadsheet, come up with a bunch of different themes that we think we might find. And then we just go line by line, analyzing the user's feed, the person we're talking to, their feed. And then using that, we go back and we build a survey about the topic, and then we'll send it to a very broad section of our customer base or market. And basically, the goal of that is to go from narrow to broad to narrow to broad, so that by the time we get to writing a report and pulling out insights, and these do write reports, they tend to be a couple of pages long, and they synthesize the themes that we discover during this process. We have like a really rich idea of how our customers and the market broadly thinks about buying, say, an email marketing tool. But equally, you know, that could be like a whole different set of problems as well. So that's Relate. So it's about finding these insights that you might not normally find just by doing the kind of one-dimensional research or no research at all. Unfortunately, that's very common as well. I've just flicked my wedding ring off. I'm just going to just be right back.
We can cut that off. Magic. I like it. I really like that process of how you approach it in terms of like converging and diverging. How the words that I, you know, there's this design concept that I've heard of, where like first you diverge, you think of as many ideas as possible, and then you converge, and then you like decrease the options based on your criteria. Mm-hmm. And this is what you're doing. You're going from very broad to very narrow to very broad to very narrow, to like that iterative process helps you, like you mentioned, really like get to know like who are we helping and how are we helping them? And, you know, you're really like almost refining that whole information.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't want to take credit for that. I'm not like super smart. But I tell you what, I work with Benjamin Elias, and Benjamin is that smart and did come up with that concept. So, you know, really got to credit Benjamin for that one.
I like it.
But yeah, that's Relate.
How long do you say that process took you? If you could look back, like, what is like, how long, for people who are listening, like how much time should they spend on that specific part? It could be a couple of weeks, or it could be longer, like 6 weeks. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I've been at Podia now for about 6 months, 7 months. I can't remember really. It feels a relatively short time. Because time flies. I've probably run about 5 or 6 of these in that period. Now, they tend to take about 45 days start to finish. And sometimes they're running like, you know, on each other. But they more or less are about that period. You can run them in a much shorter time if you need to. Like, you don't have to do this every time. The great thing about post playbook era is there is no playbook. Yeah. These are just ideas of how you could do it if you have the resource and time. But ultimately, if you didn't have 45 days, literally picking up the phone and calling 5 of your customers would be an improvement over not doing that. So, and that would take you 5 hours, you know? Yeah. And so what I would say is, this is a system for doing this specific kind of research process. It doesn't have to be the only one. You know, I've run it differently in other companies and stuff like that. So yeah, I would encourage you, if you're not doing any, to do some relating to your customers in a way that maybe you feel uncomfortable with, or you haven't done it before. If you are doing it, well, great. Maybe think about whether you could make those insights richer by adding in, you know, different data sources like screen recordings or, you know, heat mapping or like user metrics and stuff like that. That product usage data is what I'm trying to say. So
I think the reason why I brought this up is that, you know, it's often the excuse I've heard is like, doing research takes so much time, you know, doing a survey and crafting them and talking to people. But you're really getting at it. First of all, it doesn't have to take a long time, you know. And then secondly, like in the post playbook world, like what else are you to do? Are you going to go on hunches? Are you going to go to benchmark data, which is now like those benchmark data is probably not relevant anymore? Or like what else are you supposed to do other than like figure out what to do next based on what your customers are going to tell you? Exactly.
Yeah. And you're leaving opportunities on the table if you don't, right? It's not just about not understanding or it not being as effective as it could be. Like there are literal channels that you might discover in this process or ideas for campaigns that would like really hit in a way that you would never hit otherwise that you just don't know about because you haven't got the insight. You know, you can sort of think about it and you can go, they might feel like this, but actually you don't know until you actually go out there and start doing this work and build a sort of effectively customer sense.
I like it.
Right? Yeah. Because you get this sort of intuition after you've spoken to enough customers and you're in their heads regularly. It starts to become like a second nature. But you still have to keep going because the customer changes. Customer base changes, the market changes. You have to keep on doing it.
And I think that's another important thing that you mentioned around like relate leads to ideate. Because like when you start coming up with those ideas, the question comes up, where did this come from? And most people, you know, like we saw another company do it, like Mutiny, or we saw our competitor do it. And we like this is now saying, hey, we're doing this because we heard from our, you know, straight from our customers, our best users, that this could be a good idea around this, that this, you know, this, there's like some foundation that is not third party. It's actually first party directly to your, let's talk about ideate. And would you say that that is like, first of all, relate and ideate like go so well to each other? And secondly, you know, is that true? What I just mentioned that you have a little bit of proof that it came from your customer.
Yeah, well, look, I can actually give you an illustration here to explain why this works. So, okay, so the thing is about ideation is that you go from this like very concrete world of customer research into like this very kind of almost world of like, whoa, these are fun ideas and stuff like that, and we're brainstorming and all that kind of stuff. But there is value in doing this. Because as you did say, Ramley, like these are opportunities for you to relate practically, to show that you relate and get your customer better than anyone else does in the market or in a different way. At Podio again, we did this work early this year where we were brainstorming campaign ideas for a project. And we wanted to come up with a couple of campaigns that we could potentially run, and as an exercise in that, we kind of just shot out ideas. Like everyone was meant to generate like 50 ideas each for a campaign, and which is incredibly fun and definitely something you should challenge yourself to do if you get a minute. You'll come up with some great things. One of the ideas that I had in that process was based on customer insights from work that I hadn't even been trying to get this stuff out of. Sort of coincidental. But during the process, I discovered that a lot of people will talk about the pain that they experience in like this kind of mental block of going from like, I know I want to create a product that I can sell on the internet to here is the product.
Yeah.
Buy it. And they effectively, they start and then they hit a wall and then they can't get past the execution wall, of kind of, and it's like they've run out of juice. And I jokingly pitched the idea of, I said, you know, and as one of my kind of throwaway ideas, hey, why don't we create a drink called Creative Juice? Let's launch a soft drink, for our customers. We'll make it bright purple, which is the, you know, the color of Podio's brand.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will find that funny. They'll find it entertaining, and you know, we'll stay front of mind for them versus, you know, whoever else is Kajabi or whatever. Yeah. Now, obviously, that's almost like a glib idea. It's almost like a jokey idea, but it kind of hit a note for us in some way. We all laughed at it as like, that's a dumb idea. And we put it on the back burner.
Yeah.
Just went in the slush pile. Until we discovered that we decided we were going to do this sponsorship program where we sponsor our people who use Podia to create content that was related to their audience with ideas that they came up with and that weren't explicitly just ad reads of, you know, Podia is an all-in-one platform for running your online business. Thank you for sponsoring this episode, Podia. Because people skip those. Now, we decided we'd let people just create stuff that their audience would like, because ultimately, we want more people like them to use Podia as it becomes a mass market tool. And we had an opportunity to work with a big YouTube channel, which is based on whole food. No, wait, plant-based cooking show is called, I think. They reach a huge audience, right? And we would never have reached those people, but we allowed these people. We said, hey, look, you know, you make whatever you want, but here's this idea that we had. Why don't you make on your show a soft drink called Creative Juice?
So good.
And they did. They bought this concept. Well, they didn't buy it. We paid them. But they made this soft drink. You can go online and search for it. Creative Juice, plant-based cooking show. And you'll see this bright purple juice.
Who is a YouTuber? I told you that.
The plant-based cooking show.
Whole food
plant-based cooking show.
Oh my goodness. It is real, dude. This is legit.
And Ramli, remind me how long that video is.
That video is 3 minutes? Three minutes? Yeah.
3 minutes? That's a 3 minute ad read, effectively.
Right?
And it's not just a 3 minute ad read, it's a 3 minute ad read that people want to watch because it's authentic. It speaks to their customers, and they've gone on this journey of like, oh, I love this brand. I love these YouTubers. They're building a business. I want to know about how they built the business.
Yeah.
Oh, they built it with Podia? Great. Maybe I should build a business with Podia. And so this insight about customers, about how they buy or how we get in front of them, married with this kind of creative idea that we just almost threw away.
Yeah.
It became something like really interesting and really sort of like powerful. And so ideation is not, if we were in this playbook world, we'd never have come up with that idea because it just wouldn't have happened. Someone would have gone like, hey, but like, how much do we pay per click? And then you'd have gone, I don't know. I don't know how much we pay per click. Well, then we're not going to do it. It should just be a normal ad read and we should run an ad. But that's not what happened because we were not in that playbook world and we are ideating based on customer insights. It's in the way we relate to our customers.
First of all, for people who are not like watching this on YouTube, you could just Google like Creative Juice Smoothie and then Podia and it'll show up plant-based cooking show. And I just got to read some ingredients here because this is interesting.
Yeah.
Hibiscus tea, blueberry, red dragon fruit, walnuts, flax meal, banana, and cinnamon. And the juice is purple. I'm like, dude, this is like...
It's bright purple, isn't it? Yeah.
I love this. This is like something I have not seen
It's before. Such a cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really happy we managed to make it happen. Yeah. You know, I think like, I mean, that's gone up to 367,000 people as well. Like, no one else from our industry is advertising on that channel. And, you know, these are people who could buy our product. because it's a mass market tool now. You know?
That makes sense. That makes a ton of sense. I just love this. I feel like, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sensing that, you know, at some point in 2-3 years ago, the pendulum swung where like everything has to be measured. It needs to be like attributed. It needs to like one, you mentioned it, $1 in, $10 out, like it's all metrics. And I feel you're, what I'm hearing is like things have changed so much. Attribution, Google Analytics have changed, AI, that it's swung back a little bit more to the other side where there's a, you know, now the campaigns that will win in the next few years are ones that you're talking about, like capturing attention, and that is creative, that, you know, that's different, like this creative juice, which I've never seen before. Is that a fair thing to say, that it's, you know, that's why, you know, relating, ideating is important, because yeah. And even narrating, because, you know, we haven't really dug into that, but it's about telling that story. And it swung back to that more creative side to marketing rather than the more analytical, robotic, almost like performance, one in, $1 in, $10 out kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like it's harder to measure now because of all those changes that you just mentioned. And it's harder to place even an ad because how do you know where it's going to go, you know? I shared a study recently on LinkedIn about buying third-party data and how third-party data that advertising that is sold in the advertising industry. There was a study done on this specific market segment for IT buyers, so IT decision makers, and what the study took data from, I think, 5 of the 10 top data brokers. So, you know, it's very clear in the study, we're not saying it's Bombora, but they are one of the people who are in that 10 thing, or LiveRamp as well. You know, is it LiveRamp? I always forget the other data brokers. Anyway, and this study shows that it's actually people who bought those audiences have effectively a better chance of finding a customer by literally, you know, tossing a coin and going, is this our customer, than they do with using the third party data, right? So there is now going to be a whole generation, not just of that one study, but the accumulation of these sort of things, a whole generation of marketers who become suddenly like converts to this way of thinking, like, oh, we might have been like lied to by the whole marketing industry, yeah. And we've based our careers on it. Maybe we should do something different. What are we good at doing? We're great at coming up with ideas that resonate with people. And, you know, we're great at executing. And, oh, cool. Like, now we have to, like, build a story about our impact rather than just going, here's the spreadsheet. And frankly, like, I find that such an exhilarating challenge personally. And yeah, that's where I'm living anyway.
That's good. I think that makes a ton of sense that things have changed from before. I want to like close the loop on this around, you know, this campaign. Once again, like this is just amazing. I love how it's tied back a lot of things here. But in terms of like results, my first reaction was like, oh, how many people did you get from this audience and stuff like that? But that's really the last part of the framework is around narrating this. Can you talk a little bit about this narrate piece, maybe specifically about this campaign and how, you know, you've communicated this internally as well as externally to your customers and to potential people, prospects?
Yeah. Well, I can say first of all, this specific creative juice thing was one of the creatives within this campaign.
Okay.
So we actually, I believe it was about 50 people we sponsored in like a 2-month period. And this was one of them. So there are a lot of other ideas feeding in the same set, right? Some of them were more creative. Some of them were like effectively just ad reads. And they were across all sorts of
different
industries. Maybe
here's a little crazy. Maybe you can like sponsor a bunch of, and then have a competition. Be like, who can make the best creative juice?
And well, then, yeah, I mean, why
and then
not?
You produce like, it.
Why not multiply
you produce it?
It,
make a batch of 100, and then I'm not industrial. That's a little crazy, but yeah.
It's not a little crazy, Ramley, because I looked into
oh,
it.
Oh, what?
It's expensive.
Yes.
It costs $20,000 to have like even a case of juice commercially produced. And then I looked into all sorts of different ways of turning, buying people blenders and sending them the ingredients and stuff. And I looked
like
into how
kit,
we could really
like
juice this. Yeah, juice this campaign.
Yeah, that is cool. Okay.
But it's, you know, it's funny, like some of the other campaigns in that, you know, I don't want to go on too long about that. Some of the other creatives were stuff like, we had a woman who makes cakes on Instagram, and she did a reel, where she is, icing a cake purple the whole time that she's talking about Podia. And she's like explaining how she achieves the icing effects. This thing is mesmerizing to watch.
I need to go find it now.
And then we had one more where a guy teaches mountain biking tricks to beginners. And he, we gave him an idea to, you know, the game Horse that you might play in basketball or, yeah, well, Horse has the same number of letters as Podia. And so we were like, hey, why don't you play a game on Podia where, you know, you do a trick and then someone else does the trick. And if you lose, you get P. And then the first one to, you know, spell out Podia loses. And he went off and produced a series of things on that. And the whole way through, he was showing these tricks and then in between talking about Podia. And we just gave the idea. They delivered it and they executed on it. And it was incredible, honestly. I think it's some of the work that I'm happiest with in my career is this stuff we've done recently. But yeah, how do you narrate the benefits of that? Like the default thing with all of this stuff is really a couple of things. The first thing is people want you to report on clicks and conversions, but that's incredibly hard because I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but it's hard if you're just looking at those two things because clicks through, well, you have to assume that somebody's put a link into their bio, then somebody's gone and read the thing and then clicked on it. So that's already a high amount of friction. And then you have to assume that somebody who did that went through and completed the sign up form on your landing. Realistically, you're probably not going to see a massive ROI if you just looked at those things. My argument with narrate is that so many things have changed about the marketing industry that there's almost an ineffective way of looking at marketing investments now. And in fact, what you should be doing is you should be marrying up qualitative and quantitative signals. So qualitative being like, you know, what people have told you or kind of sometimes not what people have told you, but what you've watched them do. Quantitative being things like clicks, you know, conversion numbers, click-through rate, all sorts of stuff like that. Now, the trick is, and this is a system that I invented personally when I was at Powered by Search previously. You have to have a mixture of those things. Now, I put them on a little matrix. I call it the attribution matrix. On one axis, you've got qualitative to quantitative. And on the other, you've got low confidence to high confidence. So what that looks like in practice, let me take an example. But the sponsorships channel is actually a great example here. I tend to favor narrative reporting for harder to attribute channels like sponsorships. So, in addition to like qualitative high confidence signals, such as like self-reported attribution, when somebody tells me they've signed up after seeing the, you know, the Whole Food channel or the cake baking thing. I also use my gut feel, sometimes, which is very unpopular with CFOs, but, you know, sometimes it's part of the story, right? But then, you know, I should also add in what I call key, key reports, which are quantitative high confidence signals. So that would be stuff like, you know, affiliate link tracking or, stuff like actual attribution data from an attribution platform, like maybe like, I don't know, Dream Data or something like that. And then you should also add in supporting metrics, which are quantitative low confidence signals. So there I would add in literally the number of people who viewed a related landing page or something like that. Now, the impact of that is that you're no longer just reporting on this very sort of like, did it work or didn't it work? You're saying, look, there is no, unfortunately, there is no report I can show you that will tell you the real picture here. We'll either underreport or we'll overreport. It won't be effective. However, if I tell you in advance that we will never fully know. There is no attribution machine that is effective in the world. And I say to you, look, we're de-risking this. So we're saying we have anecdotally seen these things to be true. We also have numbers which show that these things are true. And we have other things which show that this is probably true. In the center of that is the truth somewhere, because we're effectively triangulating around the actual reality. But also, we have to accept this level of ambiguity in marketing now. It is here to stay. It's not going away unless, for some reason, all of the governments of the world and all people decide that they are going to become, you know, full anti-privacy people. Like, we're never going to have that data again. And, you know, on a personal human level, I'm pretty excited again about that, you know, because I don't want to be tracked on the internet. You don't want to be tracked. And yet our whole industry is based on tracking people and like invading their privacy. But now we have an opportunity to not only like do more effective work by sort of removing those, like, the analogy of like the bean counter, right? You're no longer just like pushing beans around a table to show where your investment should go. Now you're saying like, okay, like, let's put it everywhere, because some of this is going to be really effective and maybe some of it will like become more effective later based on it being really effective here and vice versa. So that's it. So relate, ideate, narrate.
I like it.
Just gonna do it over and over again.
I like it so much. I like how you've since, you know, shared the story with Podia and how you've applied it there. I actually want to shift gears before we wrap up. You know, we're gonna talk about career power ups, particularly something in your career that has helped you, whether it's a community, whether it's people, whether that's a marketing, book or something else, but over your career, you've been head of growth at Powered by Search, and now you're at Podia. What's your career power up? What's a power up that's helped you accelerate your career to a different level?
Should we talk about people? So
totally up to you, man. What's been your All career right. power up?
What like,
whatever that comes to mind for you, it could be people, it could be something else for sure.
Yeah. Well, let me give you one really recent one, which is like really messed with my world. I actually worked with Louis Grenier twice this year. If you don't know Louis, he runs a website called Everyone Hates Marketers, which is really, really worthwhile. And I did like a 90-minute workshop with Louis where I was basically like, hey man, I've done so many different things in my career. And I'm like, take this with a pinch of salt. Like, I'm good at a lot of different things. You know, I'm not necessarily great at any of them, but I'm good at a lot of different things. What the heck do I do? Like, help me find out like how to position myself. And Louis kind of works with people like a producer, in a studio. So you have to bring all of the ideas and kind of all of the insights and stuff. But what Louis is really, really good at is knowing when to say, hey, like, I think you're probably lying to yourself or to me. And saying like, or go further, develop that idea, like, tell me why you think that. And what Louis was able to do for me through that process was effectively say, like, you know, you've come from this kind of like very playbook based world, and say like, okay, how do you get out of that? Why would you want to? What do you believe? What does it look like for you to actually communicate that to people? And what I ended up kind of zoning in on personally, I mean, this won't work for everyone, but everyone else will have a kind of different outcome, is that I effectively treat myself or position myself now like a growth marketer mixed with a creative director. I'm somewhere in between helping people come up with like interesting ideas that stand out and also making them happen. And then aligning that with all of the stuff that actually makes companies grow. And that for me, when I was like, Louis said it, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
that's obvious now.
Obvious.
That's what I've been doing. Yeah. And I told some friends after this, you know, I think I may have mentioned it to you as well, Renly, but like, and when I did, a lot of people were like, yeah, obviously. Yeah. And I was like, dude, couldn't you have told me that? But you know, that for me was like a pretty big career power. Yeah.
I like it. I think just clarity around that. I think it's also, you have a good group of people that you, marketers that you've stayed in touch with, that can give you that sounding board almost. Because, you know, Louis, yeah, like he will give you some insight. And then I love how you brought it to your people and be like, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, man, that makes sense. And if you probably got a bunch of response, like, Mark, that is not you. You would be like, yeah, I guess so. You start questioning, but that almost affirmation across your sounding board has helped you confirm what you've already kind of probably deep down know, but just have now a little bit more assurance around it.
Isn't that a funny meta, really, for this whole conversation, right? I had a suspicion, a theme. I went out and I asked a bunch of people, hey, like, this is what, like, what do you think? I related to people and the, you know, the people who relate to me. I came up with ideas. Yeah. Like, I mean, I literally went out and after I was like, oh, this is the right positioning, I was like, I got to like create something now that shows this off. And I finally launched it actually, which is my landing page on my website, which is very different from a lot of other people.
Sure. It does look just, it's more bold and everything else. Even the colors are like, yeah, this feels like,
yeah, I effectively like art directed my website, which was cool. It's a fun experience, and it kind of feeds into that narrative of being like a creative director. And then, you know, I'm measuring it by like, how resonant am I to people around me, and you know, more people signing up to my email newsletter and stuff like that. So, you know, totally right, Remley. Like, it is a kind of a meta there, but also like the network people who you build up is incredibly valuable, not just for its value in terms of like what you can extract in, you know, like numeric value, but in terms of your kind of relational value and your sense check of the world and, you know, your sense of self even. I think that, yeah, maybe that is the most sort of powerful power up, is having a network that you trust and value as people more than just numbers.
If you enjoyed this episode, you'd love the Marketing Power Ups newsletter. I share the actionable takeaways and break down the frameworks of world-class marketers. You can go to marketingpowerups.com to subscribe, and you'll instantly unlock the 3 best frameworks that top marketers use, hit their KPIs consistently, and wow their colleagues. I want to say thank you to you for listening, and please like and follow Marketing Power Ups on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you feel extra generous, head and leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and leave a comment on YouTube. It goes a long way in others finding out about Marketing Power Ups. Thanks to Mary Sullivan for creating the artwork and design, and thank you to Faisal Kaigo for editing the intro video. And of course, thank you for listening. That's all for now. Have a powered up day.
Marketing power-ups. Until the next episode.